All right, so welcome back to our quarterback series here on the End Zone Podcast. And this is episode 2. Jonders joins us more full-time in this one. And in classic Jonders fashion, Russell Wilson comes up right off the bat. So we talk about just kind of big checkpoints here. We talk Russell Wilson. We talk a little Carson Wentz. Baker Mayfield comes up in this discussion, as does Jared Goff, and then kind of a lengthy discussion on Ryan Tannehill. That Ryan Tannehill discussion, by the way, will continue into episode 3. I cut it off kind of in the middle of episode 2, off in the middle of the Ryan Tannehill discussion, so we'll finish that up in episode 3. Plus a detailed discussion a little bit about play action show. That should be a ton of fun as well. Please enjoy. Now, we have gone around the horn once here. Let's hit it up for round 2. We'll start with you, Jonders. Who is a guy you want to talk about? Tell me who he is, and then one guy ahead of him and one guy below him, and where he is on your list.
I have to do this. Eric's not going to be surprised when I pull this name out. I saw earlier there was a top 4 quarterback debate in the NFL. Well, Pro Football Focus had a top 4, and this man's name wasn't in it. I am growing old advocating for my boy Russell Wilson, but I have him at number 2. And it's every year we look at the Seahawks schedule and think, oh, they'll be lucky to win 9 wins. And year in and year out, they have him, or he has them in the playoffs, except for that one year in his career. I'm excited to see him with all these weapons. He's going to have a Hall of Fame tight end for the first time in his career. Boom, Jimmy Graham burn. And I can't wait to see what. And yeah, I mean, DK Metcalf, if he takes another step forward, I don't know. I think Russell Wilson will finally maybe get his MVP. How about that as a take?
Wow.
Oh, so I, then above him, I have Pat Mahomes, and below him, I have Deshaun Watson.
I have Russell Wilson at 2 as well, and I have Patrick Mahomes at 1, and I have Lamar Jackson at 3. I have no negatives really to say with Russell Wilson, other than the sort of rogue play style that he has, that he sometimes has to have or has to go through due to the incompetence of Brian Schottenheimer. But I'll get to that in a hot second. But
hello.
I have no negatives about that, about what Russell Wilson, except for that rogue play style where I'm a little concerned with him getting hurt. Weapons, he has DK Metcalf, gosh, I can't speak. And Tyler Lockett out there, I like that. I think his weapons are fine. I think he's a duo of running backs, he's really, really good. I think his weapons are fine. The only thing that would stop Russell Wilson, if anything can, and I don't think this can stop Russell Wilson, but if anything can stop slash limit Russell Wilson, is Brian Schottenheimer. And yeah. I remember, I think it was around January, I was around here with Eric, and he ranted for like 15 minutes about Brian Schottenheimer. And I let him sit there and rant, and let him sit there and get so pissed off at Brian Schottenheimer. I had the same exact, I guess you could say, anger, and so I guess say criticism with Brian Schottenheimer. The guy runs an offense that should be 50,000 miles away from Russell Wilson. Let Russell Wilson throw the ball all around the daggum field. Let him run around. Let him do what he needs to do. Don't just sit there and run and keep him in there in that Stone Age Schottenheimer crappy offense. I don't like that. But that's the only thing. I love Russell Wilson, but if anything will stop slash limit Russell Wilson, it's that gosh awful. I was gonna say something really, really bad, but I guess you say that gosh awful criminal back there. Horrible. Hate that guy, man.
Yeah, I have him at 2 also, right behind Mahomes. There's not many quarterbacks that I hate the Saints to play other than Russell Wilson. Like, it's so stressful playing that guy. When the Saints played them last year, you know, they had a nice, healthy lead. They had Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback, and they were leading by, like, you know, double digits. But you just couldn't take your eyes off the game because Russell Wilson just kept doing, like, these amazing things. Like, Cam Jordan is, like, right there. Like, right there, like an inch away from touching him, and Russell Wilson just does his magic, and he's, you know, rolling to his right, making one of the most beautiful throws downfield, and he just kept doing it again and again, and he just doesn't let up. You know, it reminds me of like Rocky IV, I think it was, with the Russian, Dolph Lundgren. And he's like, he just keeps coming. He won't stop. And that's how you feel with Russell Wilson. Like, he just keeps coming at you. I don't care if you're up 10 points, 20 points, 30 points. Like, that's the type of guy you pay franchise quarterback money to, and you let him take him. But like you said, Brian Schottenheimer, man, I can't stand that guy. Like, I can't stand him, man. Like, oh, my God. Like, why did they hire him? Like, you got Russell Wilson, one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. Why bring Brian Schottenheimer put him at running back coach. Okay, that's fine. But to run your offense? Oh, my goodness. They're wasting the guy. They're really wasting him.
Yeah, you just you want an answer for why they hired Brian Schottenheimer. Just look to that that white-haired guy that's pumping his fist at head coach.
Chomping on that gum.
Yeah.
Juro, I assume you're in the same boat.
Yeah, I have him at 2. The fun fact, since Russell Wilson's rookie season, the Seahawks have been 6 out of the last 8 seasons, the Seahawks have had a top 10 offense by efficiency. And that speaks volumes to Russell Wilson, because he's the one constant through all that. And even as they try and surround him with a run-first offense, he still manages to make that offense go. The bad news is that's basically is confirmation for Pete Carroll that he's doing the right thing, when everyone else knows that it's Russell Wilson kind of keeping the boat going. But but yeah, he's amazing. I mean, it's a shame he wasn't like 3 inches taller, because John Elway probably would have drafted him.
Yeah, I'll jump in here for my second round question here. A guy that you guys, that Ryan brought up, I'm definitely curious to see where you guys have Teddy, because to me, Teddy Bridgewater's in this kind of a lot to prove camp, this kind of 14 through 19 range. I have him at 19. I have Goff above him at 18, and I have Ryan Fitzpatrick below him at 20. He averaged about 7 air yards per attempt last year. He was not a check down guy. They actually did throw the ball with him, and he performed really well in the starts that he had and kept the Saints afloat. And I don't know. I kind of buy into Matt Rhule, and they have Robbie Anderson there, and Curtis Samuel might bounce back. And I really like DJ Moore. I kind of love, like, Teddy Bridgewater. Some people have talked me into him. I just think he's going to have a bigger year than people expect this year.
Did you say you had Teddy Bridgewater at 19?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And I don't have much to say about him. I don't know why I don't believe in his play with the Saints last year as much as I feel like I should. Yeah, but I have Josh Allen above him and Baker Mayfield below him. And it's really – being 19 in the league, if this exercise has taught me anything, it's that the league is very quarterback heavy. Being 19 isn't a bad thing. Like, I feel like 19 is a very competent start in the league. And I don't know much about Matt Rhule. I guess I should do some studying before the season starts, and maybe I should have done that already. But I'm excited to see Teddy Bridgewater benefit from having Christian McCaffrey in the backfield.
Yeah, I mean, I watched Teddy Bridgewater, for 5 games last year. And honestly, like, 3 out of the 5 games, it was a struggle to watch him. I mean, I cursed the TV more than I ever had. I mean, he missed open throws. He didn't take shots when it was there. He didn't make throws when it was there. But with that said, he got better. Each week you see him get better. He has a nice arm, even though, his air yards aren't great. He has a nice arm. He can make the throws when it's there. He's kind of gun-shy, but I think that's something that comes with confidence, over time within an offense. And he showed that when he played with the Saints for the 5 games. I have him at 21. He's kind of at that Dalton scale range for anybody that listens to, around NFL podcast. He's in that Dalton scale range where you sign him, he's going to play for you, and he's going to do fine, but you're going to want to replace him. And that's just kind of how I see him. He's going to be that guy that's He's going to start for a lot of teams in the NFL. He's probably going to have a long career. But nobody will probably ever look at him like a franchise quarterback, which is kind of unfortunate. He's a great person from everything I've known about him. He's a good leader. Every single teammate that has ever played with him loves him, and they play hard for him. The Saints players loved him to death, and they were happy to see him get even if it's in a division, they were happy to see him get a starting job in the NFL. So I think, you know, I think he's going to do well with the Panthers, and I think, you know, with the weapons aren't bad. I think he could do fine if he catches on to the system. It's a Joe Brady system, someone who he worked with the Saints, and I think he should catch on fairly quickly, and I think he'll do fine. You know, he has a ceiling where he'll probably never be that top eight-ish type quarterback, but he'll be kind of a good starter, kind of that Andy Dalton, or maybe even a little better, to where, you know, scoring points, moving the ball, taking care of the football. You know, you won't come away hating Teddy Bridgewater.
I think the Carolina Panthers offense is really going to look like a poor man's version of the New Orleans Saints offense this year, because Teddy Bridgewater kind of had a career resurgence with the Saints, and part of that was Peyton, and part of that was the system he was playing in. And with Brady and then Christian McCaffrey to kind of catch some of those passes, Teddy Bridgewater loves checking it down. Mm-hmm. And in C-Mac, he's going to have a running back who can actually, just like Kamara, make the most of those receptions. And I do think, like you said, he does have weapons around him. The one big concern for me is his offensive line is going to be a good step back from what he had with the Saints. Yeah. And he's not going to have the defensive help that he had before. So I do think that his numbers could look very similar to what they did last year, but he's going to win a lot less games because the Saints as a team was winning when he was playing. Yeah. And they were kind of supporting him. And not to say he was doing poorly, because he was doing well. But like you said, there were definitely games where he was just trying to protect the ball and keep the offense moving and then just play keep away from the defense. And I think with the Carolina Panthers, that's going to be a lot harder because their defense just isn't on the same level.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with all those points. I had Bridgewater around 23. I had Drew Lock at 24, and I had controversial little pick. I had Joe Burrow at 22 above him. I watched Teddy Bridgewater. I didn't watch all the games that Teddy Bridgewater played, but I watched around two or three. And what I really came away from those games is that he isn't really the best, but he isn't awful either. I'm not sure you said it, Joe or Ryan, but Bridgewater does have a tendency to check down. And so with C-Mac there, he'll certainly rack up those yards. Checking the football down, Matt Rule's cool. I don't really know all too much about Matt Rule, but I guess I have a general idea of what the offense he wants to run. And with DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson down there in Carolina, I think it could be somewhat serviceable. The only gripe I could really have about Teddy Bridgewater, I guess I can say confidently, is that sometimes he has a tendency to hold on to the ball and take sacks. Yes. But really, other than that, I'll stick with that whole mantra of him not being absolutely terrible, but he's not the best really option either. So,
Ryan, why don't you hit us? Who's our next quarterback?
There's somebody I wanted to hit on. Let's see what you guys think about Carson Wentz. I have him at 15.
And wow.
That's pretty low. That's pretty low for a lot of people. I know a lot of people like him, and I like him. Actually, when I put him at 15, I felt bad because I like him more after last year than I did before, because I thought he showed me a lot last year. He was able to do a lot with very little. So, you know, I wouldn't get caught up about 15, but I have him in that tier kind of with Matt Stafford, Phillip Rivers, Jimmy Garoppolo, that tier there where good, solid franchise quarterbacks that could get better. You know, that could do more depending on the situation around them. That's pretty much where I have him. So I just kind of wanted to get you guys' thoughts about him, because something that just always stood out in my mind. It was like 2018, the Saints played the Eagles, and the dome was loud, and the Saints just whipped the Eagles. And he just had a look on his face like it was just too much for him. Like, the lights were just too much for him. And I know that's hard to quantify, you know, or anything like that, but it just made me question, like, does he has it? Like, did Nick Foles have that it, even though Carson Wentz is an overall better quarterback? But after that, last year, with what he dealt with, he showed me a lot, and I think he does have it. But I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on Wentz.
Okay, I had him at 5, and I don't know if it's a mixture of watching this season's All or Nothing, and one of my best football friends is Ryan McGinley, who's a diehard Eagles fan. But kind of to the opposite of the point that you made about him in that Saints game, I don't recall that, but I do recall, I think it was a Week 2 game this year against the Falcons, and the toughness and grit he showed in that, and staying in the pocket and making throws downfield.
I remember that.
Yeah, that game stuck with me. That's down to my core when I think about this guy. And I don't know. I just feel like if you were building a quarterback in the lab, it would look like Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
And I think some people are giving up on him too early. I mean, the person I have in front of him is Lamar Jackson. The guy I have behind him is Dak Prescott. I don't know, man. He is high up on my board. I mean, like I said, if I had the 5th overall pick in the NFL draft, I would take Carson Wentz. I just think he's that good. And I don't know. I kind of thought I would like to hear what other people think, because I kind of thought that wasn't a controversial pick to have him up that high at all.
Yeah, I definitely don't think it's controversial. I had him at 6, with Matthew Stafford below him at 7, and then Dak, of course, at 5. I think that if we're going to heap all this praise on Russell Wilson for all those years surviving with nothing, like, when has Carson Wentz ever had, like, a great wide receiver for a full season?
Never.
Never.
Like, I don't see anything. Like, DJX is always hurt. When he is healthy, they click, and the offense, you look no further than that Redskins opener a few years ago where they just blew the doors off of him in the second half, and Carson Wentz throws for something like 250 yards and a half. Like, to me, like, that offense has now got Marquise Goodwin. They've got Jalen Reagor. I think Dallas Goedert is going to explode and kind of overtake Zach Ertz a little bit. Plus, they've still got Zach Ertz. I think that they – to me, that's the most interesting division race in football, is the NFC East, just because I think the Eagles just aren't that far behind from the Cowboys offensive talent-wise. I don't believe that. I realize I just lost Fair Garden, and that's a big deal. I love Carson Wentz. I think he's great. I think he has Russell Wilson type qualities to him. And obviously you can't have this discussion without saying he's injury prone. I get that some people think that's stupid, but he is. Like,
I don't think can I just make the caveat? I don't think concussion should count when people are talking about injury prone, because I feel like that has more to do with the body than with that kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's fair. But yeah, I have Wentz at 6.
I had Wentz at 9, and I had Aaron Rodgers above him at 8 and Tom Brady at 10. I think a lot of people, a lot of people were really way too hard on the guy last year when he didn't even have a 1,000-yard receiver. His two leading receivers were tight end. Zach Ertz had 916 yards. Dallas Goedert had 607. He didn't even have a 500-yard receiver last year. Alshon Jeffery finished with 490. Didn't even play barely half the year. So I think a lot of people were really, really way too hard on the guy. Like, he didn't really maximize. I would tend to believe that he maximized his own statistical output with what he had on his roster. And adding now with Jalen Reagor and Marquise Goodwin, you have that with Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, and you still have Alshon Jeffery there. I think he's going to be good. I think he's going to return to that that whole top 10 conversation that people had him in before the start of last season. So I think he's going to be really, really good this year. And I think he's really going to start turning a lot of those doubters that had him, that were down him a lot during that 2019 season back into those supporters that he had during his best days, I guess you could say.
I think he hit the nail on the head by mentioning the fact that because of the injuries to the receiving core last year, his leading receivers were tight ends. And there was a lot of debate from Philadelphia Eagles fans about the fact that Howie Roseman took Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson in the draft. But you look at what the Eagles have on offense beyond the rookies they added this year, and that's what they were really missing is speed, unless you really count DeSean Jackson. And DeSean Jackson's getting older, and he's missed a lot of time. So adding Jalen Reagor really gives you that skill set if he hits. And then they doubled down on it by getting John Hightower, who's another vertical threat type of receiver. The idea is they have intermediate targets with their tight ends. They needed somebody who can really push the ball downfield and actually open up space for both the tight ends to work and also the running game. And I think with that, Carson Wentz's numbers should go up so long as he stays healthy. And as far as his injury concerns go, and again, I'm not saying he doesn't suffer injuries because he definitely does, but most of his injuries aren't necessarily tied together. They're different fractures of different body parts, and then he had a concussion. So Matt Stafford started his career with a couple of serious injuries, and then in the middle of it, he didn't get hurt at all. It's definitely possible for Carson Wentz to do that. I don't know. Like, I'm just saying we can't really say for sure that he's going to get hurt this year, but I do think if he stays healthy, the Eagles are in a position where he's going to put up some numbers, and I think they did the right thing, actually, by investing a high draft pick to find a backup, because if Carson Wentz does get hurt, at least then their season's not over.
Right.
Yeah, and Joe said something about the GM and the draft. I mean, we're just having a totally different discussion about him if they got DK Metcalf instead of Whiteside. It's just completely different.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So that was – sorry, I'm losing track of the carousel here. Joe, you're up.
Oh, man. Putting me on the spot. One I think is interesting to bring up, I would like to talk about Baker Mayfield. Just because he had such a great rookie season, and then last season he really crashed back down to earth, so much so that some people are ready to give up on him. I don't know if I'm there. I was one of those people. I believed in Freddie Kitchens. I bought too much of the Kool-Aid on that. And I do think that that did play a huge part in Baker Mayfield's struggles last year because he was trying to do too much. I also think some of his interceptions were wide receiver like – ball hits him in the hands, the ball goes sailing. I know against the Broncos, that was definitely a thing. And I do think that Stefanski's offense is going to help Mayfield in a way. And basically having the offense kind of run through Chubb. Well, I know the argument about running backs don't matter is a thing. The Stefanski slash Kubiak slash like that kind of style offense, like the Shanahan tree of offense, it's going to put Baker Mayfield in position to not have to deal with as many true dropback passing sets, which should help him because one of his big weaknesses is his height, and his he tends to kind of get happy feet when he gets some sort of pressure. Okay. Having more play-action attempts should save him from some of that, and it'll also kind of streamline his reads and make it a little bit easier to find OBJ when he's wide open.
Yeah, to me, he's at the top of my a lot to prove this year tier, kind of in the discussion with Darnold, Garoppolo, Goff, and Bridgewater. At 14, I have Matt Ryan above him at 13 and then Cousins at 15. I couldn't agree more, Joe. I just think that offense is built to amplify Baker Mayfield's strengths, which during his rookie year were those play-action deep shots. Like, that's when he had his most success in that rookie stretch that everybody – points to was when he was throwing to these massive windows downfield off the play action. I think he's going to bounce back. To me, he's going to be put in a scenario of say 2019 Jerry Goff, where he has all these options off of play calling, and I think he's so much more talented purely as a passer than a guy like Jared Goff. So I really think he's going to excel this year.
I agree. It just boggled my mind last year, the lack of play action they did with Baker. get him in play action. Stefanski should be smart enough to know what to do with Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield can throw the ball. He has a good arm talent. And they have the weapons. The offensive line should be a little improved. So there is no reason that Baker Mayfield shouldn't succeed this year. The Freddie Kitchens experience was a disaster. There was no leadership. I've heard all kinds of stories from people I know. I mean, it was a mess in Cleveland. So hopefully, all that will be ironed out. And hopefully Baker Mayfield, I see he hadn't done any commercials this year and nothing like that. I just hope he's kind of taking it seriously and just, want to just attack that quarterback position and be the leader. Study the playbook, watch film, and take it seriously. If he does that, like the dude, I loved him coming out. He annoys me a little bit, but the quarterback talent is there. So he should succeed. I think I have him in the late 20s, kind of grouped in with like Josh Allen and those guys. He has a lot to prove, but he has what Sam Darnold doesn't have. The talent is there. The weapons are there. He just needs to execute it, and hopefully the coaching staff will put him in a situation to succeed. Because I think he can. I think they should show a lot this year. They disappointed all of us last year, but I think this year, I think they're going to shock some people.
I really agree, and I'd like to touch on that tier that Eric had around that most approved tier. I think he belongs smack dab in that tier. Like a lot of you said, that Freddie Kitchens experience was horrible. He really went away with what Baker Mayfield did really well in his rookie season. And instead of, riding with the play action that got him a lot of success and a lot of recognition in his rookie season, he went to that whole 5-Y crap. It just didn't work. Obviously, it didn't work. Bringing Stefanski in with that play-action offense and being able to ride on the legs and physicality of Chubb and won't even forget about Kareem Hunt back there as well. Back and he's going to be there at the start of the year. Putting them back in that sort of play-action sort of offense and just hauling those deep shots to Odell Beckham Jr. down the field and I guess you could say whatever you want to do with Jarvis Landry, I think it's going to put him in another or a really nice area to bounce back in his third year and really get the Browns back on track in 2020.
I think that the weirdest thing that happened last year was that Myles Garrett hit somebody with his helmet, like used his helmet as a weapon. That was the weirdest thing that happened that year. But think about this year, how crazy this year has been. Anyways, Baker Mayfield, whenever I think about him, I think about this one pass he threw to Callaway in the preseason his rookie year. It instantly made me a believer. He showed in that preseason he was able to throw a touch down the field with power. I kind of, we all lost a little faith last year. I have him at 20. I have him below Teddy Bridgewater, above Jared Goff. And that's heartbreaking for me that I kind of view Baker Mayfield and Jared Goff as similar. You mentioned bringing in Stefanski. Hopefully this can be what Baker Mayfield needs. I still have all the faith in the world in Odell. I've never gotten off that hill. And I want to see Odell look like he used to look, and I want to see Baker Mayfield look the way he does in my dreams.
Well, the big thing for me with Baker is I think this year with Stefanski, you're going to see basically the rich man's version of last year's Minnesota Vikings offense.
Mm-hmm.
I think Diggs might be a better receiver than OBJ at this point, but I do think Nick Chubb is a better running back than Dalvin Cook.
Right.
And I also think the Browns offensive line this coming season is going to look better than last year's Vikings. Now, I don't know if the Browns defense is going to be up to par to make them win games, but I do think the offensive supporting cast, like Baker doesn't have any excuses. And I think in that way, the Browns did exactly what the Broncos did. And that if you're not sure about a quarterback, do everything you can so that he has no excuse. Like if Baker fails this year, it's completely on Baker, but I don't think he's going to fail.
But I want to press you, Jonders, on something you said about how you view Baker close to Jared Goff. How do you view Jared Goff? Because to me, Jared Goff's in that same tier, but in and this is just an aside, and however many of you want to jump in on this, you can, and then we'll get back to the rotation. But for me, I have Jared Goff at 18, and I feel like even that's high because even in his best starts, he just makes some really bad throws occasionally, like really head-scratching stuff. I wonder, tell me more about how you feel about Jared Goff.
Yeah, Jared Goff is my 21, so I have him lower than you. I think it's kind of the same vein as the way I talk about Derek Carr being boring. I just think that Baker Mayfield became boring last year, and Jared Goff last year became very boring. So I guess those three are kind of linked to my mind as just being uninteresting to watch.
Jared Goff for me is kind of like the Andy Dalton of this like generation, in that. But it's like
when that is like a perfect descriptive.
But yeah. It's like when Andy Dalton had like all the supporting cast in the world, because at one point early in his career, he had probably one of the better supporting casts in the NFL, and they were a playoff team.
Yeah, but it's not rocket science that Todd Gurley no longer looks good or Jared Goff. Yeah. The offensive line sucks, so that's what happens.
Well, yeah, and that's what happens. And I think that's the difference between like a Goff and like a Watson, is that, and again, I keep going back to Watson, but I think Watson is just such a perfect barometer for this, is that you take the pieces away from Jared Goff, and when the Rams are forced to kind of play the game through him, they struggle because he's just not the kind of quarterback who can carry an offense. He's a guy you can win with if everything else is okay, but he's not a guy you can win because of. And
okay, I do think
Sean Watson's a guy you can win because of.
But, okay, I'm sorry, I can't help but be a host, Eric. I spent a lot of time being a host.
Go for it.
But Sean McVay says that Jared Goff's his guy and he's the perfect quarterback for a system. Is that any of that Sean McVay's hubris? Like, should he be actively seeking a better quarterback, or is he trying to prove to everybody that he can win with this guy?
I think the problem the Rams have is that they can't easily accumulate another quarterback who's going to be better than what they have.
Yeah.
They're trapped in the fact that they were winning despite the fact that their quarterback wasn't good enough. And I think that can happen. I think when you have a quarterback on a rookie deal and you do a build for a win now type of team like the Rams did. The Rams really did like the fast food approach by just trading all their picks, spending all their money, doing everything they could to like win this year. And then they didn't. But that said, like that's the approach they took. And then the hope for them was that Jared Goff was going to develop and be good enough to carry him as they tried to like reload the roster around him. And the problem is that Jared Goff's just not that guy.
Yeah, you said it. He's Andy Dalton.
Right.
Yeah. But they paid him like he was, you know, Patrick Mahomes.
They definitely did. But I think that just happens is that they were winning so many games. It's like what happened with the Jets and Mark Sanchez. You're winning games despite your quarterback not being great. And you get to this point where all of a sudden you kind of like the league figures out that your quarterback's not that great. Your roster is starting to decay around you, but it's too hard to get another quarterback because you're winning too many games to kind of end up in that top five, top 10 pool. So you kind of start at that point. What I would do if I was a GM is you start taking shots on guys in the dark and hoping one of them becomes Dak Prescott or maybe a Jalen Hurts who hits. But the Rams right now are stuck where they have a guy in Goff that they can't necessarily easily replace, but they probably want to.
Right.
Do they even have a first round pick in 2021?
I don't believe so.
Wow. Man,
along with that freaking cash, man.
Wow, that's bad, man.
The person, the person that I have below Jared Goff is Taysom Hill, who's not a quarterback.
So Trey, who's your pick here?
I guess I'll continue on the whole carousel with a guy that I covered a lot last year. I was talking – media talked to him a lot down here in Nashville. I'll talk about Ryan Tannehill, I guess. I'll stick a local guy in here. I have Ryan Tannehill at 14. I have him above Kirk Cousins and below Kyler Murray. It's really the really weird Ryan Tannehill. A lot of people fall in love with his performance in the postseason where he – barely threw for 100, barely, didn't even throw for 100 yards. I don't believe in his first two postseason games that he came around and did his thing in the AFC Championship game and ended up losing. But I don't. A lot of people tend to forget is that the record set in play that he had during that, I guess you say that week 7 through week 17 stretch, when he was named the starter and when the Titans clinched the postseason berth.
It's all good. No worries, man. Keep going.
When they clinched postseason berth week 17 in Houston, he was amazing. And the thing is that it wasn't just the whole, I guess you could say, the whole basic he's throwing the ball, he's playing really, really well. He elevated that offense. Derrick Henry before Ryan Tannehill stepped on into the field and replaced Marcus Mariota, Derrick Henry was somewhat struggling. And that was really due to Marcus Mariota's, I won't call it incompetence, but I guess you could say below average quarterback play on the field. Derrick Henry was somewhat struggling when Ryan Tannehill came onto the field. He exploded. He exploded from week 17 onward up until that AFC Championship game when the Chiefs freaking stopped him with a brick. So, and it wasn't just Derrick Henry. It was A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, he had some sort of success with Marcus Mariota, but when Ryan Tannehill came in there, A.J. Brown started to play like the rookie of the year. He elevated that offense. And
so,
go ahead, my friend.
Finish up, Trey. Sorry.
I elevated that offense. So I think it's hard to really gauge, I guess you could say, a permanent long-term spot, I guess you say, in a quarterback ranking for him. But I guess for 2020 this year, I'll have him in my top 15. Oh, I really does this year with a full year and with that big old contract that he just received in the offseason.
Yeah, I just – my comments will be a question because, to me, at first I had him in the top 10. I released kind of a top 10 in May just on Twitter, and I got bullied pretty hard on it. But and not to call anyone out specifically, but, Joe, I know you disagreed. I just – to me, here's my question to the group. Why wouldn't you have him as a top 10 quarterback? Because all his metrics last year and his tape say he's a top 10 quarterback.
Oh, I could do this one because of cowardice. Because I wanted to put him in the top 10, but I kept being talked out of it by the little voice in my head, so it's cowardice.
Here's my thing. Ryan Tannehill last year finished the season as the 5th most efficient quarterback in football, according to DVOA. Prior to last year, the highest he had ever done in his entire NFL career was 17th, and that's concerning. And granted, last year was a remarkable season. The transformation the Titans offense had around him is definitely very real. To kind of go to your point, Derrick Henry, before Ryan Tannehill came in as a starter, he went for 3.68 yards per attempt, 4 touchdowns, caught 6 passes for 102 yards. When you look at the whole season, he ended up going for 5.08 attempt, 16 touchdowns, and caught for another 100 yards. And granted, he's not a receiving back, but the impact Ryan Tannehill had on the rushing offense can't be overstated. Like, he was important for the entire offense because you couldn't just sit in coverage and sack Marcus Mariota, because that was that shows up in the Broncos game in a real way. Marcus Mariota is afraid to throw the ball. And what ends up happening is you can just play tight coverage and somebody eventually gets home because he just sits in the pocket and waits because he's gun-shy. Mm-hmm. Ryan Tannehill, off of play action last year, was a real weapon for them to the point where he was actually opening up rushing lanes for Derrick Henry. What concerns me going forward, and this is why I have him at 17 right now, and he's in that pool with, like, Baker Mayfield, Carr, and Cousins. My big concern is that was a career year in the sense that his yards per play and his touchdown percentages were as high as they've ever been. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that again now that they're giving both him and Derrick Henry real money. But, I mean, I'm optimistic. Like, I like what he was doing with Arthur Smith. And I think Arthur Smith, in a way, was kind of discovering the three-point shot in the NFL last year. There's been a lot of theory for a long time that play action is basically stealing. Mm-hmm. And the Titans actually really ran with that in a way that, like, it kind of reminded me of the Houston of Houston in the NBA, and the fact that they just pushed this whole idea of like, let's shoot threes and see if like threes are actually good or not. Play action is good, and the fact that Arthur Smith was willing to do that really impressed me, because I had a lot of questions about him before the season started.
Yeah, this is my thing. This is the case study in the NFL of why every single offense should run play action on every passing play, is Ryan Tannehill. You're talking about all those career numbers he had. It's because of play action. I remember last fall, Chris Wessling put out a stat of Ryan Tannehill with play action, without play action. And I just asked him, why isn't every team just running play action constantly? He responded with a shrug emoji. Just run play action.
The thing is, we have not – I'm not saying that we can necessarily do it on every single play, but there's definitely reason to believe that no team in the NFL has reached the idea where you're getting diminishing returns from it. And I'm curious why teams aren't trying to push that more, especially teams like the Kubiak offense and the Shanahan offense that build their entire game around the run action anyway. See how often you can get away with it, because essentially you're stealing. The second level always has to respect that.
Yeah, but the thing really that concerns me with the whole play-action thing with Ryan Tannehill is that with play-action last year, the Tennessee Titans ran, I guess, a lot of two-man routes out of play-action, and that was a staple to what Mike Mularkey did when he was head coach and Terry Robisi was still there calling the plays. That was a staple of what the Tennessee Titans did, a lot of two-man routes. There was a lot of times where it was A.J. Brown spilled out wide, run play-action, you keep got a lot of guys in for it to take. A.J. Brown runs a nice little dig route, and he catches it, what, for 10 yards, and it can take it, what, for 20, 30, 40, all the way for 50, 60 yards for touchdowns. That's what concerns me. And it's the whole concept of what's the word I'm looking for? The whole concept of elevation, or some sort, I guess you could say, adding something new to the play action. Because a lot of the route trees in the Titans offense last year in play action seemed a little bit basic. And it worked time and time again. So, I mean, I don't know. You don't just stop running it. But it would seem a little repetitive in nature and just kept on running it. But I'm really interested to see what Arthur Smith does this offseason regarding the evolution of the passing game and play action. And the passing game in general. Because the passing game outside of play action, even though Ryan Tannehill, like, he was really good last year at play action, Ryan Tannehill wasn't all that good. I guess you could say outside of play action, he wasn't breaking records like he was when he was running play action, but he wasn't really nearly as good when he was throwing the ball away from play action. So I'm really interested to see how he really evolves with that, along with Arthur Smith in the second year as OC.
Yeah, I had Tannehill at 10. I just said, F it. You know, I'm rolling with Tannehill, man. Like, I loved what he did last year. I just, with this exercise, I kind of just tried to throw out the past and just kind of look at the last one or two years of each quarterback. And for me, I just thought he elevated his game. The play action helped, obviously. The weapons helped. But I think he just took a step and found his groove in quarterback play. And I think he can be consistent with it going forward. I don't think it's a thing that's going to drop off a lot. I do think he will come down a little bit to where he was with his efficiency and his yards per attempt that he had last year. It will come down to earth a little bit because I just, you know, defenses, you know, different opponents they're going to play. But I think he's going to be good, man. I really like – it just shows you with quarterbacks, man, it's like you just don't know, man, like, 3 years, 4 years. I mean, how many years has he been in the league since, what, 2011? I mean, you really don't know when you cash into a quarterback, you know?
Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.